Good evening, folks, and welcome back on this Saturday, the 30th day of November 2019, part of a long holiday weekend. I'm your host, Mark Hall. And you know what? As weeks go, this one was relatively quiet. Yeah, we have the continued attacks on the Bill of Rights, the Constitution, the very concept of the rule of law, you know, impeach, 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 and the hell with anything else that gets in our way. But ultimately, if anything, the American people began to see through it, and there are even a few on the far left starting to wake up to the fact that what they've been doing may just have backfired, at least to the point that most Americans are sick and tired of it. For his part, the president made a surprise visit to the troops in Afghanistan on Thanksgiving Day. Wisely, he kept the press in the dark until it was too late for any of them to screw things up. And it seems to have been pretty well received, especially by the troops. And yeah, Thanksgiving was followed up by Black Friday, and while there may have been a few small-scale riots and the usual fisticuffs over a new TV or toaster oven, it doesn't look, so far anyway, like anybody's been killed, and if anything, there was less pandemonium than in years past. So let's take a look back at the holiday-shortened week, more or less chronologically, starting with a few things obscured by the impeachment smokescreen. The communists in Congress were busy out reauthorizing all of the very same abominations that got us here in the first place. And irony of ironies, even some of the old left is starting to take notice of that. The New Republic, for example, asks, why the hell did Democrats, as if they were somehow defenders of the Constitution, yeah, they must be believing their own propaganda, just extend the Patriot Act? It may seem to many Americans, begins this piece from last week, that Washington is entirely consumed by the impeachment inquiry and that no other important business is getting done on Capitol Hill. But last week, on the 20th of November, in a break from the three-ring circus proceedings, the House of Representatives voted to fund the government through December 20th, and a continuing resolution that, as usual, just kind of shoves a whole bunch of stuff under the carpet with the hope that Americans won't figure out what's really being done to them. Among those things was a three-month extension of the abomination called the Patriot Act, the post-9/11 law that gave the federal government complete power to ignore the Bill of Rights, especially when it comes to sweeping surveillance provisions and search powers that have circumvented, as even the New Republic puts it, traditional rules affecting law enforcement. Key provisions of the Patriot Act were set to expire on December 15th, because back 20 years ago, even the worst of the scumbags couldn't imagine actually doing what they were doing to the former Constitutional Republic permanently. I guess they were just going to have their way with the Constitution until it needed glasses. So they said, hey, well, we'll just do it temporarily, and then we'll let our future communists extend it forever. And that seems to be what they're doing.
But that's not what worrying me. It's how to do it. These things must be done delicately, or you hurt the staff.
Included among those things that mercifully should have expired were Section 215, the legal underpinning of what's called the Call Detail Records Program, exposed in the very first leaks by Edward Snowden. The New Republic even quotes Representative Justin Amash, who they call an independent because he seems to hate the president almost as much as they do, and he left the party as a result. In this case, though, he points to hypocrisy, and there's no shortage of it, on both sides of the aisle, saying it's surreal because Republicans have, quote, decried FISA abuse against the president and his aides, referring to the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, part of this abomination, while Democrats have highlighted Trump's alleged abuse of his executive powers and ignored every other abuse you can imagine, yet they're, quote, teaming up to extend the administration's authority to warrantlessly gather data on Americans, unquote. And by tucking this measure into a must-pass bill, hey, aren't they all? House Speaker Nancy Pelosi forced many members who at least otherwise might try to claim they actually support the Constitution and oppose the Patriot Act to vote in favor of the extension. Like Bobby Rush of Illinois, who told The Hill, quote, although I do have serious concerns about reauthorizing Section 215, he said, well, you know, I guess when it comes to putting your hand on the Bible and lying, they do seem to have their price. He said, we must focus on the bigger picture here, unquote. And the three-month extension of one of the most unpatriotic things ever called a Patriot Act really underscores, folks, just how big the lie is when any Congress critter who voted for this abomination tries to claim, oh yeah, they're a really big fan of the Constitution. Except, of course, when it stops them from doing what they blankety-blankin' will intend to do by hook or by crook anyway. Michael Bolden of the 10th Amendment Center went into some detail in a nice video released over the last day or so, pointing out that while constitutionalists might be outraged by the latest extension of the evil parts of the so-called Patriot Act, there's much more that was just plain permanent from day one anyway. Everything from fusion centers and information sharing to national security letters to enhanced TSA screening, and you thought we didn't need any stinking warrants before, to the new fully operational national unconstitutional ID cards, your papers, BITA, only they don't say BITA anymore, to the growth and institution of national facial recognition. All come from the Patriot Act and its gang rape of the Constitution successor. And when you look behind the scenes here and realize what they're up to, it's obvious they're just getting started. So what else was going on while America was sleeping through impeach, impeach, impeach? Great piece from Caitlin Johnstone points out one example. William Barr, the Attorney General that's supposed to save us all from this unconstitutionality, yeah, sure, in an interview with Associated Press, put all the conspiracy theories to rest about Jeffrey Epstein, who may or may not actually be dead, but one thing's for sure, he didn't kill himself, by assuring the world that the alleged billionaire and alleged sex trafficker, Jeffrey Epstein's death, was simply the result of a very, very, very long series of unfortunate, extremely unlikely, but it could happen, coincidences. He told the AP on Thursday, quote, I can understand people who immediately, whose minds went to the sort of worst-case scenario because it was a perfect storm of screw-ups.
That's my story. My story. Well, I ain't got a witness and I can't prove it, but that's my story and I'm sticking to it.
And just to make the point, Caitlin Johnstone kindly provides us a list of some of those unbelievable coincidences. This perfect storm of unlucky oopsies, she writes, includes Epstein being taken off suicide watch. Hey, who could have possibly thought anything like that would have happened? Not long after a previous suicide attempt, or so we're told, and shortly before he finally got it right, suggestions that the first attempt may have actually been an assault via attempted strangulation inflicted by somebody else. Who could have thought it? Two security guards simultaneously falling asleep on the job while they were supposed to be checking on Epstein or something. One of those guards not even being an actual real security guard. Security footage of two cameras outside Epstein's cell being amazingly, coincidentally, unusable due to a mysterious technical glitch. At least 8 Bureau of Prisons officials knowing Epstein wasn't meant to be left alone in his cell, but still leaving him alone in his cell anyway. Epstein's cellmate being transferred out of their shared space the day before Epstein's death. How's that for an amazing coincidence? Epstein signing a will 2 days before his death, and what kind of stupid guy does that, especially if you think you may end up using it? Unexplained injuries on Epstein's wrists and shoulder reported by his family after the autopsy. A forensic expert, yeah, what an amazing coincidence, the guy that signed off on the JFK assassination, who examined Epstein's body claiming that his injuries were in fact more consistent with homicide than suicide. So maybe he's one for two. But wait, folks, there's more. Listen carefully and see if you can swallow this whopper. Said the Associated Press, quote, the Attorney General also sought to dampen conspiracy theories. Oh yeah, he's doing a bang-up job there. By people who have questioned whether Epstein really took his own life or not, saying the evidence proves Epstein killed himself. Why is it I'm suddenly finding the magic bullet even more palatable? Adding that, quote, he personally reviewed security footage, say what? That confirmed that no one entered the area where Epstein was housed on the night he died. Well, says Caitlin Johnstone, if reporting that he's reviewed security footage, which we were previously told over and over again didn't exist, isn't enough to put those kooky conspiracy theories to bed, why, what other evidence do they need? So, there you have it, concludes Caitlin. The U.S. government, what more authority is there, says that an intelligence asset of the U.S. government and perhaps Israeli Mossad and who knows how many other foreign intelligence agencies with damning information on so many powerful individuals, both in the United States and, of course, famously Great Britain and other places, did in fact kill himself in an admittedly bizarre and wildly unlikely series of unbelievably strange coincidences, well, what else could you ask for? Checkmate, conspiracy theorists, once again, you've been outflanked. And here's some irony for you, by the very same guy who outflanked you when he got Lon Horiuchi, the Ruby Ridge Executioner, off scot-free too. No conspiracy theories there. The New York Times, though, in its report on Barr's statement, did have to throw this up. Mr. Epstein's death in August at a federal detention center in Manhattan set off a rash of unfounded conspiracy theories on social media that were picked up and repeated by, who could have thought it, high-profile figures, including Mayor de Blasio. Why, there's an unimpeachable source. Why don't they believe him? And former Mayor Rudolph Giuliani. No matter their ideology, the refrain of the theories was the same. Something did not add up. But I guess now it all adds up, whether 2 plus 2 equals 27.935 or not. And Caitlin Johnstone concludes thusly, it's just hard to imagine what more the United States government and its allied political media class could possibly do to quell conspiracy theories that now have Hollywood celebrities clamoring for more government internet censorship. I guess if they really, really wanted to dampen the conspiracy theories, there are a few more extremely drastic steps that could be taken, like maybe not lying all the time. Perhaps not hiding immense amounts of information about what the most powerful institutions in the world are doing behind thick walls of government opacity. Oh, and how about ceasing to promote their own conspiracy theories, as with Russia, 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 and Ukraine, Ukraine, Ukraine? And, oh, pay no attention to the Bidens behind that curtain. Oh, and she adds, just stop secretly doing depraved things. But no doubt, Barr's assurances will certainly do the trick. Your host will next suggest I have several other stories that somehow or other folks bear in the same area and make a similar point. From Mike Adams at Natural News, To Facebook, as your host likes to refer to it, has now banned all content having to do with vaccine awareness, including any actual facts about what may be in those things they want to inject you with anyway, whether you're allowed to know what's in them or not. Just as we warned would happen, he begins, the tech giants are now moving aggressively, or maybe we should say even more aggressively, to ban all speech that contradicts whatever the official narrative is that they have decided must be the truth. This week, Too Facebook announced they would block all content on that socialist platform that questions the official dogma on vaccines, which falsely insists, among other things, that vaccines have never harmed anyone. He calls that a hilarious lie, although for those that have been harmed, it's probably not so funny, that vaccines contain only safe ingredients, a blatant deception, and pay no attention to that mercury behind the curtain, and that vaccines always work forevermore on anyone and everyone. Can I get an amen and praise the, well, whatever god they worship in place of the real one? To Facebook has achieved this by labeling vaccine awareness information either a misinformation or a hoax, or both. At the top of the list is the assertion that vaccines are linked, how dare they, to autism, something that even the CDC's own top whistleblower, you know, the kind that doesn't get wall-to-wall coverage from the waste stream and the DNC, has revealed to be true. And this is an actual scientist, by the way, yet the vaccine industry continues to claim it's all a hoax in order to cover up the crimes of medical violence, writes Mike Adams, against children that are being committed by the pushers of these things. Notably, he continues, tech giants are banning vaccine information by labeling it misinformation in exactly the same way they banned conservative content by labeling that hate speech. They simply invent a new false category to justify the ban, all the while crushing the free speech of users and ultimately leading to the maiming by vaccine of millions more innocent children. Under this twisted system of speech police, he says, they can ban any content they don't like simply by calling it either false or hateful, regardless of whether or not it's true, and especially if it's important. He gives some examples. If you don't like infanticide and the killing of human infants after they're born, well, that's called hate speech against women, Facebook will soon declare, and you'll no doubt be banned from talking about abortion. Are you concerned about fluoride and how it might harm the developing brains and lower IQs of children? That'll be labeled a hoax by Too Facebook, even though it's been scientifically verified as true by multiple studies, and he includes the links, also now verboten. The censorship trick, of course, is limiting content to what they decide is authoritative information. And hey, maybe on that score, they can go to none other than Attorney General William Barr. Here he quotes AFP via Breitbart. Monica Brickert, Facebook Vice President for Global Policy Management, said the Socialist Media Network would reduce the distribution of false data, their term, and provide users with authoritative information about vaccinations, unquote. So there you have it. And of course, he writes, it's obvious that authoritative information means whatever propaganda the deep state, including its vaccine arm, is pushing at the moment. The history, he says, reminds us that the vaccine industry is steeped in conflicts of interest and a long history of suppressing actual scientists and whistleblowers who attempt to warn the public about the toxic effects of all kinds of ingredients documented to be in so many of these vaccines, including but not limited to thimerosal containing mercury, aluminum adjuvants, MSG, formaldehyde, and other neurotoxins that are openly admitted by the CDC to be ingredients in vaccines administered to children. And just recently, he adds, the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons denounced the mandatory imposition of vaccines, citing, quote, no rigorous safety studies exist, and warning about vaccine industry corruption of science. And their statement included, among other things, the following. Manufacturers are, in fact, virtually immune from product liability. Obviously, folks, it's a lot better to be a purveyor of mass murder by vaccine than self-defense by AR-15. So any incentive, and back to the quote, to develop safer products is much diminished. Manufacturers may even refuse to make available a product believed to be safer, such as monovalent measles vaccine, in preference to the infamous MMR, mumps, measles, rubella, triple shot. Consumer refusal, they note, is the only incentive for them to do better. There are, of course, enormous conflicts of interest involving lucrative relationships with vaccine purveyors, and they add research into possible vaccine adverse effects is being quashed, as is dissent by actual professionals. And look, let's be real here. And as an engineer, folks, your host will weigh on this one. Anybody that says anything is either 100% period safe and 100% effective, I'll call them to their face what they are, an out-and-out liar. Especially when you're talking about the diversity of human beings, there's no such thing as 100% safe or 100% effective. And nor, they note, are they the only available means to control the spread of disease. And yet, says Adams, Facebook, under pressure from radical deranged Democrats like Adam Schiff for brains, has now been bullied into banning conversations about vaccines in order to appease the industry and cover up their crimes. This, he concludes, is only the beginning. Two Facebook will soon ban human opinions on cancer, GMOs, pesticides, fluoride, abortion, and of course, we're pretty much already there anyway, politics. And this, he suggests, just might be the reason more and more people are beginning to leave to Facebook in droves. Related item from long socialist France via Paul Joseph Watson in his Summit News, where women too with an interest in the truth are now learning that's not welcome, and those who try will be called fascists and perhaps even hurt. And that means above and beyond what's already being done to them. A group of young women, he writes, highlighting a government study which showed that 52% of Parisian rape suspects were foreign nationals, and Achtung, that is verboten information, were attacked and labeled fascists by actual fascists, a.k.a. feminazis, during a protest in Paris. Two of the young women's signs read things like 52% of the rapists are foreigners and translated Cologne, Rotherham, and soon Paris. The so-called feminists assaulted the actual women, stole their signs, ripped them up, and then chanted, "Feminists, not fascists," and "Fascists out," as the young women were physically intimidated and forced to flee. Nemesis Nemesis, the group behind the protest, later said, quote, "Reminder, we came to this demonstration to denounce the violence against women and to say aloud what everyone thinks on the profile of the usual attackers. But these feminists, hashtag nosy toots, and I might be mispronouncing that, do not accept all women," unquote. The signs referenced a 2016 study conducted by the French National Observatory on Crime and Criminal Justice Responses, which did in fact find that 52% of rape suspects in Paris were, quote, foreign nationals, a fact that's even been acknowledged by the left-wing source, Vice. And the incident, concludes Paul Joseph Watson, served as a bitter reminder of what happened in Cologne after the mass molestation there and rape of around 1,200 women on New Year's Eve 2015, predominantly by men of, quote, Arab or North African appearance, and to which feminists responded by subsequently visiting the local migrant center and handing out flowers to the migrants while apologizing for the so-called xenophobia. Ironically, folks, when really, really stupid people like this finally end up dead, they also quit apologizing. And what other kinds of censorship could possibly top the kind of stuff that we already see going on, not just here, but all over Europe? Answer, Twitter has weighed in and quietly amended their terms of service, says a piece from Shane Treho at BigLeaguePolitics.com, to allow for, quote, discussions related to attraction towards minors. And yes, you heard that right. While constitutional, libertarian, conservative, scriptural-oriented talk may increasingly get people at least shadow banned, their terms of service now say, quote, discussions related to child sexual exploitation as a phenomenon or attraction towards minors are permitted, provided they don't promote or glorify child sexual exploitation in any way, unquote. And obviously, what constitutes glorifying it is now up to authoritative sources. And obviously, what constitutes authoritative information, or even conspiracy theory, is in the mind of those who pull the puppet strings. Why does your host somehow tend to suspect that while you might be able to get away with glorifying a little bit of pedophilia and calling it art, you actually said something negative about pedophiles, you're probably more likely to get banned for that? Twitter even noted, continued Treho, that they would allow for nude depictions of children on their platform in certain instances, like evidently if they considered artistically appropriate. Quote, artistic depictions of nude minors in a non-sexualized context or setting may be permitted in a limited number of scenarios. Example, works by internationally renowned artists that feature minors. On next, and finally, to the charade, where a headline from the Gateway Pundit's Jim Hoff says, boomerang, the latest polls show that the Schiff show and the show trials have now backfired bigly, because Democrats thought that trashing the United States Constitution openly, whereas both parties have been doing it secretly for decades now, dissolving the personal rights that still remain of every American, and impeaching the president on a ham sandwich would lead them somehow to the promised land. They believed their own lies, but here comes the boomerang. The latest polls show Americans didn't buy what the Schiff show trial was selling, and Democrats are increasingly voting to impeach without evidence, especially at their own peril. They quote a new Marquette poll showing impeachment support has dropped in Wisconsin as Trump now leads the top four Democrat rivals. And an Emerson poll published Monday showed independents now oppose impeachment by 49% to 34%, and that's a major reversal from October. Furthermore, The Hill said that viewership fell by more than 1 million for Friday's televised hearings compared to midweeks, and it was already no great shakes, and that opposition to impeach at any cost has jumped by 10 points among independents, as it became more and more obvious to even the most partisan that this was nothing but another witch hunt. A follow-up piece from Zero Hedge entitled Schiff Hits the Fan notes that the first House Democrat has now publicly come out to oppose impeachment. Now, don't get too excited, because she still wants the president gone. She's just not willing to go out on the impeachment limb. With public support, it says, for impeachment waning and the risk of a potentially disastrous Senate trial looming, House Democrats have suffered their first defection from the impeach bandwagon after Representative Brenda Lawrence of Michigan said she no longer supports the effort because, quote, we're so close to an election, I will tell you, sitting here knowing how divided this country is, I don't see the value of taking him out of office, unquote, said Lawrence, who instead favors censuring the president over allegations, and I guess that way they don't actually have to prove anything, and they don't feel quite so guilty about it either. Or maybe exposed in their re-election. And finally, are you ready for this? Adam Schiff has now publicly floated the idea, say several sources, of the House, instead of hanging on to their articles of impeachment at any cost, passing them on as, quote, a sealed indictment. That way, we can impugn all we want for as long as we want, don't actually have to ever explain, document, or even prove anything, and it gets us off the hook for all the lies these witnesses are telling besides. So having said all of that, we'll pick it up with a change of pace when we get back.
When I think back on all the crap I learned in high school, it wonder I can think at all. And my lack of education hasn't hurt me none. I can read the writing on the wall. Code of Thrones. On religion, but I showed up with a lot to hear the call. Come on now, give me a sign you're listening to me. You hear me talking, you hear me crying. It's confusing to me, Lord, I'm terrified. Never been much on religion, but I showed up, just fell down on my knees.
Welcome back now to the second segment for this evening on this Thanksgiving holiday weekend. I'm your host, Mark Call. And since it was obviously a different kind of a news week as a result, let's change gears quite a bit at this point to a story or two that I might not usually do. As a matter of fact, the kind of story that I would normally give a very wide berth, because it isn't that important, unless it bears on those things that really affect the root of what's going on economically, culturally, politically, and especially spiritually and scripturally in formerly free America. So let's turn to the American Music Awards from earlier in the week. Yes, totally forgettable. Your host certainly didn't watch it. Wouldn't advise anybody else to either. And from the look of the ratings, not all that many Americans actually did. But it seems the real story here has to do with something else, something we've talked about before, as it turns out, and that includes the 80-20 rule. And it really speaks volumes about what's actually going on, especially when it comes to the propaganda effort and the attempt to completely undermine everything this nation once stood for and, create that thing I've sometimes referred to as a literal hell on earth. And they weren't even pulling any punches. The story I saw first as I was doing my usual peruse the news in the morning, basically separating the wheat from the chaff when it comes to things worth reporting, came from Paul Joseph Watson at Summit News. The Woke American Music Awards, says his headline, set a record low viewership in a key demographic. Audiences evidently are getting tired of the relentless progressive preaching that they're being exposed to from the Hollywood left. All right, I remembered thinking, fine, but no particularly big deal. Despite being rammed, he said, though, with woke themes like gender politics and non-existent man-made global warming, now called climate change, the AMA hit a record low in viewership for the key demographic of 18 to 49-year-olds. He gives a summary of some of the hellish content and the now mandatory gender bending the waste stream wants to cram down Americans' throats. But not quite with the detail of another story that I saw from the Vigilant Citizen that really nailed the central theme. As they put it, the 2019 American Music Awards, it was hell, literally. And yeah, it begins before the thing even started. I knew exactly what would happen, said the author, but I wasn't expecting just how right I would be. The 2019 AMAs were a satanic extravaganza mixed with a whole lot of woke brainwashing. And to top it all off, there was a recurrent theme that was just plain difficult to ignore. Hell. Like, literal hell. Indeed, several performances featured artists performing in actual hellfire. And when there was no hellfire, we had to suffer through another kind of hell, virtue signaling, of the heavy-handed and contrived kind. Now, folks, this is a pretty lengthy piece with lots and lots of really disgusting photos, so I'm not going to go into a whole lot of detail, but I will at least hit the high points and lay out the author's thesis for you. It got off to a bad start, he says. Something was wrong with Selena Gomez, who sang off-pitch for a good couple of minutes. Then she started dancing. She was offbeat and sluggish. In short, she seemed completely out of it. A BuzzFeed headline later said Gomez was having a panic attack. So the first performance of the awards was difficult to watch, but it was still a fitting introduction to a hellish night. That was followed up by some artist called Keisha performing in a church that is melting into rainbow colors. Hey, can you catch the oh-so-subtle symbolism there? Keisha performed a song appropriately entitled Raising Hell. It began with the artist saying, "Welcome to our Sunday service," which evidently doesn't share much in common with the kind Kanye West has been making headlines for. However, Keisha's service didn't have anything to do with Scripture or the Messiah. As the title suggests, it's about the opposite. At the beginning of the performance, Keisha stands in a church that's melting into rainbow colors, symbolically alluding to the dissolving of that old-time religion into something new and better and, of course, rainbow-colored and woke. Around Keisha is a cast of carefully selected dancers, ranging from the gender-neutral people to men dressed in pink robes. Then she bursts into lyrics that might even sound a bit blasphemous. And I'm not going to quote too many of these, but here we go. Hang up, witness. Solo cup full of holy spirits. Something wicked. Ooh. Speaking in tongues in my blood-red lipstick. The backup dancers then do devil horns while she sings, I don't want to go to heaven without raising hell. Then out comes Big Freedia, a rapper who performs in drag, singing some rhymes dressed like a priest. And I won't even talk about this one, other than to say at the end of the performance, the background becomes fiery red and the dancers drop dead. In short, says the author, this performance was a thinly veiled satanic black mass. But we're just getting started. A singer named Billie Eilish came out with a performance that was basically all about the world slowly turning into hell. Maybe not fast enough for their taste. And it was entitled, All the Good Girls Go to Hell. Can you see the theme here? The author goes on to know he's written about this song before and explained that the music video is all about Billy being possessed by Lucifer himself and rooting for the destruction of humanity. It has lyrics like this, All the good girls go to hell, cause even God herself has enemies, and once the water starts to rise and heaven's out of sight, she'll want the devil on her team. And in spite of the satanic lyrics, the claim is the song is all about global warming. And to make that point, Billy wore a shirt that said, No music on a dead planet. And I guess I leave the obvious irony in that to the listener. And the performance ended with Billy being raised up on a platform while the whole set caught on fire. And that, notes the author, wasn't even the most symbolic performance of the night. Because he then moves on to Camila Cabello, who seems for the last couple of years to have been one of the chosen ones of award shows. She's everywhere. She performs, she presents, and she gets tons of close-up shots when she's in the crowd. But the spotlight comes at a price, and the price seems to be a song like this one, Living Proof, which begins in a celestial setting with everyone dressed in white, the color of purity and innocence. Even the men are wearing white dresses in a gender-blurring agenda that seems unavoidable. Camila then sings, quote, like a choir singing hallelujah when my body's crashing right into you, when we align, oh yeah, do you feel me, can you feel me, because I can't breathe. The agenda seems to be to sexualize anything that's godly, all part, says the author, of a satanic mindset. And in this case, even a word like hallelujah, which means literally Yah be praised, as almost everyone listening to this show probably knows, is used repeatedly in a dark sexualized context. At first, the performers are surrounded by greenery as they descend from heaven to earth, but then things get really symbolic. People dressed in black grab the white-clad performers by the throat. Evil takes over goodness and purity, and as the sky gets dark, Camila is offered a black rose, symbolizing the dark side. Do you think she accepts it? Of course she did. She's the industry pawn, whereupon all hell breaks loose, literally. Everything catches fire. There's the other theme for the night. Everybody has sex with everybody else. And from heaven, Camila descended to earth, accepted the dark side, and then descended to hell. The entire performance embodies the classic narrative of good girl gone bad. This seems to now be de rigueur for every pop star who wants to ascend to superstardom. There's more. Ozzy Osbourne, the Prince of Darkness, performs. And in conclusion, says the author, the 2019 AMAs had a recurring theme, and it really was hell, especially hell on earth. And through this ungodly agenda, suggests the vigilant citizen, the elite's effectively trying to bring hell on earth by straying humanity away from everything that's good, pure, and scriptural, and push it towards the evil, the sick, and the corrupt. These award shows seem to serve two purposes. On the one hand, they showcase industry pawns as they perform about their own slavery as opposed to being woke. And on the other hand, they give the most useful pawns shiny nice trophies to tell other artists, you too could have this if you follow our rules. But the reason I began with this particular story today, folks, is because I'll suggest again that the agenda here is not only pretty darn transparent, it's no longer even remotely being hidden. Here next, a story that surprised me, not because it highlights dangers from vaccines that some of us are aware of and Big Brother and his propaganda ministry don't want you to hear about, but because of the source. This was actually reported by the Daily Mail in the UK, and here's the headline. Two teenage boys, it says, become the first ever to contract meningitis from the chickenpox vaccine. You know, that once common but not really that big of a deal. A childhood, almost rite of passage, now turned into something booga 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 really scary, and it turns out there's more to it after all. The live virus, continues the headline, that they received was reactivated over a decade after they first got the shot, say doctors. Both boys, says the subheading here, received the two recommended doses of the varicella or chickenpox vaccine as children. And in rare cases, they note, in immunocompromised patients, which, by the way, seems to be part of the point here, the live virus used in the shot can reactivate and cause infections, including things like shingles and meningitis. One of the boys was immunocompromised with a history of leukemia, while the other was otherwise healthy. The story comes from a paper published in the journal Pediatrics, which says both teens had received the recommended two doses of the varicella vaccine as children. It was first developed in the 1970s, first distributed in the U.S. back in 1995, and they claim it's proven safe and effective, but in very rare cases, you know, the live virus might cause problems later on, including things like shingles, pneumonia, hepatitis, or meningitis, an inflammation of the membranes covering the brain and spinal cord. Previous cases of the vaccine reactivating have, in fact, caused meningitis years later, and they've been reported in children, though, who received just one dose of the vaccine. But less is known, the authors write, about reactivation in older children after the two-dose vaccine series. And it's the part here about less is known, folks, that kind of causes your host's eyebrows to raise just a bit, because isn't that exactly what Google, to Facebook, Twitter, and most of the CDC organs are trying to ensure when it comes to the general public's general level of ignorance? I'll say it again, just to make this clear. Anybody tells you that any medical procedure, medicine, or vaccine is 100% absolutely safe and effective without exception is a liar, and the truth isn't in them. And as any honest engineer or mathematician can tell you, there's no such thing, folks, especially when it comes to the diversity that makes up the human population. The point is, once upon a time, when it came to medical procedures, human beings actually had a right to be fully informed, especially when it came to the risks that, yeah, actually always do exist. Imagine that. Next, I want to spend a few minutes on what is arguably the most evil corporation in the entire world. Maybe the only real competition is Monsanto, now having been purchased and run by the former IG Farben, aka Bayer. But Google poisons the mind, too, rather than just the body. Says Ethan Huff, writing for Natural News, more details have emerged about gulags, and that's the correct pronunciation, folks, censorship agenda, including the fact that the world's most well-known search engine has actually hired an army of human censors to manually curate its search results to pull up only what Big Brother's favorite public-private partner, including Big Brother China, we now know, wants people to see, not what people are actually searching for. And even though Gulag CEO Sundar Pichai recently told Congress, under oath, as if that mattered, that his company doesn't manually intervene in the Google search engine user experience,
that's my story and I'm sticking to it.
Evidence since uncovered by the Wall Street Journal proves otherwise, demonstrating the lawless company culture that actually exists at Gulag. And according to the WSJ, Gulag has, quote, increasingly re-engineered and interfered with search results to a far greater degree than the company and its executives have acknowledged. And additionally, Gulag has been caught intentionally altering its search algorithms to favor deep-pocketed advertisers at the expense of small businesses. Quote, Google made algorithmic changes to its search engines that favor big businesses over smaller ones, and at least in one case made changes on behalf of a major advertiser, eBay Incorporated, contrary to its public position that it never takes that type of action, revealed the Wall Street Journal. The company also, they continued, boosts some major websites such as Amazon.com and Facebook Inc., according to people familiar with the matter. Makes sense, given that they're all comrades working towards the same Bolshevik revolution. But wait, there's more. In what Ethan Huff calls the deep state at work, Gulag manually tweaks various autocomplete suggestions. In other words, if you look for something politically incorrect, they'll offer you a whole bunch of really politically correct suggestions first before they basically ignore and tweak the results they give you. They also have things called knowledge panels, sick, and featured snippets, as well as Gulag news to push their own agenda. From there, let's go into some more detail in the almost 20-printed page article from the Wall Street Journal that begins like this. Every minute, an estimated 3.8 million queries are typed into Google, prompting its algorithms to spit out results for hotel rates or breast cancer treatments or the latest news about President Trump. Well, some of it anyway. They're arguably, they say, the most powerful lines of computer code in the global economy, controlling how much of the world accesses information found on the Internet, and the starting point for billions of dollars of commerce. And it goes into the history about how 20 years ago, Gulag founders began to build their Goliath on the premise that its search algorithms, or were they really DARPAs, could do a better job of combing the web for useful information than humans, or eventually, as we found out, than humans would be allowed to. And Google executives have said repeatedly, in private meetings with outside groups and in under-oath congressional testimony, that the algorithms are objective and essentially autonomous, unsullied by human biases or business considerations.
These aren't the droids you're looking for.
These aren't the droids we're looking for. Move along. Move along.
And then they quote some of the great big whoppers that you've all heard, noting that that message, though, often clashes with what happens behind the scenes. Because over time, and now I'm going to pronounce it correctly, Gulag has increasingly re-engineered and interfered with search results to a far greater degree than the company and its executives have acknowledged. This Wall Street Journal investigation has found. These actions come in response to pressure from businesses, outside interest groups, and governments around the world, think especially the communist ones, and they've increased sharply since the 2016 election and the rise of what some at least call online misinformation, the journal found. And they note their evolving approach marks a shift from their so-called founding philosophy of organizing the world's information. Oh, and remember when they used to say, don't be evil too? What a laugh. To one that's far more active in deciding how that information should be allowed to appear. And more than 100 interviews and the journal's own testing of Google's search engine reveal the following, they say. 1. Gulag made algorithmic changes to its search results that favor big businesses over smaller ones. We've talked about some of that. And engineers at Gulag regularly make behind-the-scenes adjustments to other information. We've also talked about this. On top of their basic search results and the beauty of things like their knowledge panels and feature snippets are that the same company policies limiting when engineers can remove or change don't apply there. And this one certainly resonates with Natural News and those who are on the not politically correct side of the web. Though Gulag executives have publicly denied that it could ever happen, Gulag is also maintaining secret blacklists, and we've talked about that on this show before, folks, that prevent certain websites from even showing up in Gulag search results at all. And this, they note, should not be confused with those that are required by U.S. or foreign law, things like child abuse or copyright infringement, or even spam sites that attempt to game the system. No, these are blacklists that basically have to do with the politically incorrect and now verboten sites Gulag would rather didn't even exist. That's what's been happening to not only Natural News, of course, but Dr. Mercola. And believe it or not, Gulag, they say, is also paying thousands of contractors to individually assess the quality. By that, I think they mean how politically correct Google's algorithms are in order to make recommendations. If Google search results are pulling up controversial content, their terminology, that, for example, questions vaccine safety, or that blows the whistle about the dangers of genetically modified Frankenorganisms, or GMOs, then Gulag quickly jumps into action by moving those searches to the back pages, you know, page 247 out of 249 that nobody ever even looks at anyway, or they just delete them entirely. In the autocomplete function, explicitly, the feature that predicts what a user is searching for as they try to type them in, Gulag's engineers have created algorithms and blacklists to weed out more incendiary suggestions for controversial subjects such as abortion or immigration. And in effect, they're filtering out inflammatory results on high-profile topics, especially when they don't want them to trend. Furthermore, although there may be some disagreement within the company, employees can push for revisions in specific search results, including topics like vaccination and autism. In other words, says Ethan Huff, Gulag's search engine platform is anything but neutral. It doesn't actually pull up information based on what's popular or the things that people are trying to search for the most. And I guess if you actually manipulate it so that they can't, well, then you can claim, see, nobody's searching for that because we don't let them. Nor do they make available information that users actually want to access. The Wall Street Journal was at least a bit kinder, some might even say more objective, although arguably they haven't been blacklisted yet like Natural News has. They reported, though, that the journal's findings undercut one of Gulag's core defenses against global regulators, worried about how it wields its immense power, that the company doesn't exert editorial control over what it shows users. But they said regulators' areas of concern include anti-competitive practices, political bias, and online misinformation. So, far from being the autonomous computer programs that they claim, oblivious to outside pressure, Google's algorithms are subject to regular tinkering from both executives and engineers who are trying to deliver what they call relevant search results, while also pleasing a wide variety of powerful interests and driving its parent company's more than $30 billion in annual profit. Gulag is now the most highly trafficked website in the world, surpassing 90% of the market share for all search engines. In other words, folks, they're the gorilla in the room. And the market capitalization of their parent, Alphabet Inc., is more than $900 billion. Gulag, they said, made more than 3,200 changes to its algorithms in 2018, up from more than 2,400 the year before, and from about 500 back in 2010. Back your host notes when the algorithms actually seemed to reflect what people were really searching for, as opposed to what they should have been, according to Google and a person familiar with the matter. Gulag said 15% of queries today are for words or combination of words that the company's never seen before, putting more demands on engineers to make sure the algorithms deliver, you ready for this, useful results.
It all depends on what the meaning of the word useful is, and to whom.
And they note that a spokeswoman for Google disputed the conclusions the journal came up with here, saying, "We do today what we've done all along, provide relevant results from the most reliable sources available," unquote. And the journal went on to note that as part of their examination, they tested Gulag's search engine results over several weeks during the summer and compared those with results from two competing search engines, Microsoft Corporation's Bing, and there's a certainly unbiased source, right? No left-leaning at Bing, and DuckDuckGo, a private-focused company that builds its results from syndicated feeds from other companies, including Verizon's Yahoo search engine. The testing, they said, shows the extent to which Gulag doesn't offer certain suggestions compared with other search engines. For example, they typed Joe Biden is or Donald Trump is in autocomplete, and Google offered predicted language that was more, oh, you gotta love this terminology, innocuous than other search engines. And they also tested autocomplete for terms having to do with immigrants and abortion, and Gulag's predicted searches were, ready? Less inflammatory, they said, than those of other engines. Some of us might have chosen terminology like more politically correct. Quick aside here, folks. Autocomplete is just a subtle form of manipulation. If you know what you're searching for, at least so far, you can still type it in, even if the algorithms may decide later to skew your results a bit. And probably keep a record of what you're searching for, too. And this I found interesting. A 2016 internal investigation at Gulag itself showed between a 0.1% and 0.25% of search queries were returning what they called misinformation of some kind. Let your imagination go wild, according to a Gulag exec who worked on them. A small percentage overall, but nevertheless still amounting to several billion searches per year. And here I'll remind you about what research psychologist Dr. Robert Epstein has shown. You may recall his research has suggested that Google can take a 50-50 split among undecided voters and change that to a 90-10 split in the direction they want to push it, with no one even knowing they'd been manipulated, and without leaving a paper trail, all by means of those search suggestions. And he's already said that he believes just one of their changes in search results on Election Day 2018 shifted somewhere between 800,000 to as many as 4.6 million votes to Democrats and may very well have helped flip the House, among other things. Gulag did assemble a small SWAT team, that's an interesting choice of term, to work on what they referred to as these problems that became known internally as Project OWL. Borrowing from the strategy used earlier to fight spam, engineers work to emphasize factors on a page that are proxies for authoritativeness, effectively pushing down pages that they say don't display their desired attributes. And guess which politically correct sites they decide are authoritative. Let me start to wrap this up by quoting again what Ethan Huff had to say in conclusion. Gulag's search engine platform is anything but neutral. It doesn't actually pull up information based on what's popular or the things that people are trying to search for the most. Instead, Gulag is a deep state propaganda tool being masqueraded as a free service, but one which severely threatens the viability of online free speech. I'll summarize the first part of this by noting, forget Russia, 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 folks. When it comes to rigging not only elections, but twisting entire once-free societies, Gulag truly is the bomb. Have a blessed weekend. Keep your eyes open and don't be deceived.